listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Hollywood 2020 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair Part A. As we are waiting for the March 2020 issue, this program will be an encore of some articles we've read before. Keziah Weir writes on books, Sleep Study. A new edition of Federico Fellini's The Book of Dreams offers a deep look into the director's subconscious. When Federico Fellini accepted the Palme d'Or for La Dolce Vita in 1960, the director was already embarking on a fresh creative process influenced by the teachings of Carl Jung. Newly interested in his own nocturnal fantasies, he began cataloging them in what would become a lifelong project, The Book of Dreams. Between romps with such characters as Ingmar Bergman, Charlie Chaplin, and a bevy of big-butted women, the filmmaker's dreams are filled with the same existential search that pervades his oeuvre. All that we can do is try to become aware that we are part of this unfathomable mystery, he writes, beneath a peaceful illustration of a starry sky. We are a mystery among mysteries. In one dream, Fellini eats spaghetti with the deceased Carl Jung, a very handsome old man. In the photos, Fellini on the set of La Dolce Vita, a promotional poster, Rizzoli's new edition of The Book of Dreams, which includes an English translation and essays from collaborators. Cozy up, fiction fit for binging, whether on a long flight or a long weekend at home. Amnesty by Aravind Adiga, published by Scribner. In this smart twist on a classic whodunit, Danny, undocumented and working as a house cleaner in Sydney after fleeing Sri Lanka, has information about an unsolved murder. He must decide whether to stay silent or come forward and risk deportation. The Mercies by Kieran Millwood Hargrave, published by Little Brown. Spun from real-life events, this lyrical novel charts the aftermath of a fatal storm in a 17th-century Norwegian fishing village, a town almost exclusively composed of women and girls, and the violent, witch-burning newcomer, hell-bent on their conversion. The Exhibition of Persephone Q by Jesse Jezeska Stevens, published by FSG. When a slightly aimless young woman living in post-9/11 New York is surprised to see herself in the untitled lead image of her former fiancé's photography exhibit, she sets off on a quest to discover his motives, and with help from interesting acquaintances, a larger truth. Weather by Ginny Offill, published by Knopf. Time flies by in this wry story of a family, librarian Lizzie, her classics buff husband, their son, and her brother, a recovering addict. Apocalypse, climate and otherwise, looms over the narrative, and yet it is funny and hopeful, too. Molly Bitt by Dan Bivacqua, published by Simon & Schuster. A slick page-turner that dives headfirst into the celluloid world of celebrity and obsession through the rags-to-riches story of a star. On to the vanities and my stuff. Mixmaster. Interior designer Chiara Derej, the aesthetic force behind the wing and Carolina Herrera's New York flagship, embraces the old and the new. Travel and entertainment. Listening to Liz Goldwyn's The Sex Ed. Desert Island Books, John Steinbeck's East of Eden, and James Salter's Light Years. Vacation spot. My family home in Piemont, Italy. We donated half of it to the Italian National Trust and live in the other half. Plain must-haves, cashmere blanket and eye set, Tata Harper's resurfacing mask, and Shiva Rose's glow face balm. Home, architectural styles. I know this is a contradiction, but I am drawn to both Beaux-Arts and 1930s, and I cannot imagine a world without modern architects, such as Le Corbusier, Philip Johnson, Mies van der Rohe, and Oscar Niemeyer. Furniture, Christina Celestino's furniture, tiles, carpet, wallpaper, lighting. She's a Renaissance woman. Career idol, Madeleine Castaing. Recent addition, Maison C Fabrics, adapted from the wallpaper line I co-founded with the artist Costanza Teodoli Bracci. In bed, I love Olatz, pajamas, and Di Portal bedding. Flora, bodega flowers arranged in vessels from antique stores upstate. Candle, diptych feu de bois. Dish set, Wes Gordon's Carolina Herrera tabletop line with cabana. Four-legged friend, my 17-year-old chihuahua, Klaus. He is a grumpy old man, but my first baby and love of my life. Style and wellness. Perpetually worn accessory, my Nana's wedding band, and Foundry charms. Go-to shoe, sneakers from my baby daddy, currently off-white Nikes, Gucci loafers, or Le Monde barrel slippers. Supplements, wooden spoon super green protein, and anything Dr. Gabrielle Francis at the Urban Alchemist tells me to take. Workout, walking through Central Park, and Ballet Beautiful with Mary Helen Bowers. Dining, morning beverage, bulletproof espresso before I take my daughter to school. Indulgence, daily croissant. Restaurant, Sushi Avgari on the Upper East or Upper West Side. Thank you. on to the fairground. Night at the museum. At LACMA's art and film gala, a constellation of stars, many clad in Gucci, which presented the evening, coalesced to honor artist Betty Saar and filmmaker Alfonso Cuarón. Photographs by Roger Kisby. The ninth annual gala was a meeting of artistic minds. Naomi Campbell greeted a star-struck Billie Eilish, while Keanu Reeves arrived hand-in-hand with artist and girlfriend Alexandra Grant. But Sienna Miller stopped the show in a Gucci necklace made of white, gold, diamonds, and gemstones, valued at over $500,000. L.A. is kind of a second home, said Gucci's Alessandro Michel. I love seeing my friends in this energy with the California light. In the photos, Anderson .Paak performed, Sienna Miller, Naomi Campbell and Billie Eilish, Leonardo DiCaprio, a gala chair, with Betty Saar. On to beauty. City slickers. A town paved in red carpet knows how to go head to toe, from a star favorite dentist to a new Ayurvedic spa, by Laura Regensdorf. With illustrations of the people, places, and things, by Sarah Maycock. The pool at the proper hotel is a worthy place to cool off after an aromatic steam. Killer smile. Joaquin Phoenix's weathered teeth in Joker might be an unusual calling card for a celebrity dentist, but John Murashi, DDS, has no shortage of fans. Golden Globe nominees Tom Hanks and Renee Zellweger included. For Phoenix, he temporarily removed the actor's bondings to reveal real-life chips. Method acting for dentistry? Quips Murashi. Red letter. Flash bulbs love a scarlet pout, if it lasts. After Tatcha's plumping Kisu lip mask, a coat of foundation helps grab the lipstick, says makeup artist Daniel Martin. Greta Gerwig is a client. Blue tone reds, such as Rouge Dior Ultra Liquid Care and Poppy, play well across skin tones. A lip liner and brush then lend definition. Blot and powder, but don't be precious. Fit for a star. A marathon awards season calls for cross-training. Precision Run opens in Los Angeles this spring, bringing calibrated treadmill routines to its oxygen-enriched studios. Over at Rise Movement, Jason Walsh can make you a superhero, like Brie Larson, or a pilot, like Miles Teller in this summer's Top Gun Maverick. But the after-party moves are born at the Sweat Spot, run by Ryan Heffington, who choreographed Sia's upcoming film, Music. There, dance class is as much of a mental workout as it is a spiritual and physical one, Heffington says. Sense of place. Can you bottle good vibes? Celine creative director Hedis Lamont melds Palo Santo and patchouli for Eau de Californie, an acoustic solar perfume, a psychedelic utopia in tribute to California. L.A. natural perfumer Emily Lamy of Boda taps a therapeutic vein with vibration number 3, air. Its golden resin and floral notes impart a sense of luminosity and spaciousness, she says. Technicolor definition. When colorist Alex Brownsill got her start, bleaching was such a forbidden term, she recalls of the once bad rap. Years later, it's the name of her beloved salon, Bleach London, slated to bring its painterly approach to Los Angeles this spring. Stocked with its in-house range, the space will have just 4 chairs and occasionally one Georgia May Jagger, an investor. She's like, I want to be the receptionist, jokes Brownsill. Jagger swings for pink, but Bleach's new green juice quenches a thirst for a low-commitment pastel green. Serenity now. Gwyneth Paltrow might be a steadfast supporter, but in Martha Soffer's world, A-list is for Ayurveda, the Indian system of holistic well-being. This spring, the practitioner's herbal creams and four-handed massages will take root at the new Surya Spa at the Santa Monica Proper Hotel. In Kelly Werstler-designed rooms, Soffer will offer a meditative oil treatment called Shirodhara and full-body Panchakarma detox sessions. Your skin just starts to glow, she says, of the red carpet appeal. Here's what's trending. Step and repeat. The red carpet is getting irreverent, taking pages from the mixed-up files of Bowie, Kubrick's Barry Lyndon, and Oscar Wilde. Glam, but make it playful. First blush, Givenchy Le Rouge deep velvet lipstick in beige new. Two-tone Hemmerly earrings. Getting naughty, Chloe gold knotted bracelet. Clash happy, Gucci top and pants. Top in lilac, pants in red. In a cinch, Giorgio Armani royal blue shirt with black leather belt. Ruffle up, a look from Dries Van Noten Spring-Summer 2020 collection. Pale pink sweatshirt, ruffled hot pink pants, gold platform sandals, pink and black tie belt. Daisy Fresh, Louis Vuitton black bow tie, embellished with a daisy. Red alert, Christian Louboutin shoes. Looking like a new take on classic wingtip Oxfords. Silver status, Chanel clutch purse in silver lame. And old blue eyes, Uzi eye-opening liner in navy. Daisy Shaw Ellis gives us this article, Elizabethan Era, A Ruby Suite Draws Inspiration from a Hollywood Icon, with photograph by Horacio Salinas. Cartier Magnitude High Jewelry, transformable necklace in white, gold rubies, diamonds, and onyx. Price upon request from 800 Cartier. Elizabeth Taylor was a collector of art, Modigliani, Van Gogh, of husbands, six, and of jewelry. In her 1985 Vanity Fair cover portrait, shot by Helmut Newton, she scintillates in the three-piece ruby and diamond Cartier suite her husband Mike Todd gifted her as they summered on the French Riviera nearly three decades earlier. In 2011, when Taylor's personal collection sold for a record-breaking $115.9 million, Cartier bought back the pièce de résistance. Now it's put forth a reimagining of all three pieces, with a necklace featuring seven cushion-cut rubies and a ring and earrings sold separately. You know, Taylor told Dominique Dunn in her 85 Vanity Fair interview, I can't remember when I wasn't famous. With gems like these, we can't either. Vanity Fair Hollywood Calling, February 8th to July 26th. Vanity Fair Hollywood Calling features photographic portraiture and multimedia installations that capture the magic and glamour of the film and television industry's major players from the last four decades. The exhibition is a look at the Hollywood stars, the parties, and the power brokers through the distinctive lens of Vanity Fair, the most widely celebrated journalistic arbiter of Hollywood power and personality. The new exhibition at Annenberg Space for Photography, 2000 Avenue of the Stars, Los Angeles, California. Admission always free. And shown here, Michael B. Jordan, photographed by Cass Bird for Vanity Fair, November 2018. He's standing submerged in water up to his shoulders, wearing a black suit, gold jewelry, and looking intently into the camera. Moving on to the agenda, drink, a stylish and sparkling watch party essential. Your at-home watch party never sparkled so bright, with notes of crisp green apple, fresh citrus, and honeysuckle. La Marca Prosecco brings a sense of celebration to every glass, with every friend, in every occasion. Pop, clink, cheers. Award season is here with La Marca Prosecco. Watch. U.S. premiere of Romantics Anonymous at the Wallace. Adapted from the French-Belgian film Les Émotifs Anonymes, this new musical is a treat for all the senses. Angélique makes beautiful chocolates, carefully infused with all the emotion that seems to overwhelm her in daily life. Jean René runs a chocolate factory that is running out of steam. Both seek help from self-help tapes and support groups. Filled with all the joy and pain it takes to survive and love in the modern world, Romantics Anonymous is a tale that will lift any heart. Regrets Only by Maureen O'Connor. For years, publicist Peggy Siegel was an essential New York party host and omnipresent player in the annual Oscars swirl. Then, her past relationship with Jeffrey Epstein came to light. Will she ever live it down? Opening photo on the scene, Peggy Siegel with Oliver Stone, Sandy Brandt, Ingrid Sisci, Terry Gilliam, and Edward Pressman at a Vanity Fair party at Hotel du Cap d'Enroc, Cap d'Antibes, 2010. Peggy Siegel was on a yacht off the coast of Capri when her life fell apart. She'd flown from London to Italy in early July to attend a dinner Larry Gagosian was hosting at Villa Malaparte, the clifftop mansion overlooking the Gulf of Salerno, where Jean-Luc Godard filmed Contempt. Siegel, a Manhattan-based movie publicist and professional host to the New York establishment, was to stay on a friend's feed ship until the party. Then she would go to another friend's home in the south of France to celebrate her 72nd birthday, then back home, then to the Hamptons, and then to the Greek island of Patmos. At summer's end, she would attend film festivals in Telluride and Toronto. For decades, the Peggy Siegel Company has been a linchpin in successful Oscar campaigns. Her exclusive screenings and the buzz and bonhomie they inspire are crucial for pushing members of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences to vote for films she promotes. When Oscar season is at its height, Siegel has been known to host 5 events per week. The day of Siegel's flight from London to Naples, New York Times reporter Jody Cantor contacted her about disgraced financier and convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's social life. 4 days prior, federal agents had arrested Epstein on sex trafficking charges when his private jet landed at Teterboro Airport. For decades, Epstein had cut a shadowy figure in New York and Palm Beach with his mysterious fortune and connections to power players, including Bill Clinton, Bill Gates, and retail billionaire Les Wexner. In November 2018, the Miami Herald's Julie K. Brown had drop-kicked Epstein back into public consciousness with a re-examination of his 2008 guilty plea for soliciting sex from a minor, and the sweetheart deal Miami prosecutors gave him, despite evidence that he'd molested dozens of teenage girls in Palm Beach. Siegel knew Epstein. He attended a handful of her events. They traded favors, and in 2010, she hosted a dinner in his home to honor Epstein's then-friend Prince Andrew, with whom Epstein accuser Virginia Roberts Giuffre has said she was forced to have sex. Andrew denies this. The prince would later discuss that party in the disastrous BBC interview that preceded his step back from official duties in November. Siegel also knew what it meant that Cantor, who with colleague Megan Tuohy won a 2018 Pulitzer for reporting on Harvey Weinstein's alleged predations, wanted to speak. Now that the FBI had raided Epstein's 7-story Manhattan townhouse and locked safe, full of photos, Epstein's crimes had ignited into a full-blown frenzy that seemed to expose daily a fresh set of prominent figures with links to a wealthy predator. Siegel's ensuing fall may illustrate the extent of public disgust for the leeway Epstein enjoyed. Or, depending on whom you ask, the moral expectations of post-hashtag MeToo Hollywood, or the velocity of media judgment, the perils of false friends, sexism, ageism, or how easy it is to dismiss notoriously dismissive people. After the Times reached out, Siegel consulted a friend who was a lawyer. She'd only sought his legal guidance once before, when the TSA had revoked her global entry privileges for failing to declare clothes purchased in Europe. I felt very threatened as to why people were calling me when hundreds of people knew him, Siegel said when we met in the fall. The lawyer referred Siegel to Matt McKenna, a crisis PR specialist who once worked for Clinton. Soon after, Siegel briefly retained Libby Locke, a defamation attorney. McKenna advised Siegel to speak to Cantor for the article. There was no question that there was going to be reporting about Peggy, and I wanted the first foundational story to be in a paper of record, McKenna later told me. The article ran on the paper's front page on Sunday, July 14th. An accompanying photo showed Siegel in a fur shrug and gold kitten heels. It made me look like a society lady, Siegel said. The article described her as one of the social guarantors who gave Epstein a veneer of respectability. He said he'd served his time and assured me that he changed his ways, Siegel told the paper, which also quoted her saying Epstein in recent years was in complete denial. Siegel considered the article a disaster. I'm now being positioned on the front page of the New York Times, along with people who really knew him financially, socially, and possibly sexually. Hollywood's trade press came next. Struggling to communicate with her stateside crisis team, Siegel fell into what she classifies as an emotional spiral. I'm still in the friggin' hull of this boat, Siegel recalled. I go out for meals, but at the end of the day, I'm back in the hull of the boat. 1 week after the Times report, The Hollywood Reporter published an article on Siegel's symbiotic relationship with a sex offender. Anonymous former employees described gifts, favors, and an overheard speakerphone conversation between Siegel and Epstein. OMFG Jeffrey Epstein, the reporter quoted a former employee's G-chat from July 2010, Epstein's last month under house arrest in Palm Beach. She's like, "You're not dating anyone, right?" And he's like, "Well, I am, but you know she's very young." And she's like, "Stop." Siegel told me she has no recollection of that conversation and characterizes the sources as disgruntled ex-employees competing for her business. She maintains that she never worked for Epstein, never had a salary, never had a contract, and that the only thing they exchanged were favors. Siegel read the article at 4 a.m. "I'm going, this can't be happening," she recalled. "This is what it'd be like to go to your own funeral. Or to be a casualty of war. I mean, if I had been in Nazi Germany, it could not have been worse," she said, invoking ancestors who died in the Holocaust. "I thought, oh my God, I'm on the train station. I'm getting on that train and I'm going to the camps. And this is exactly what came to mind. This is the kind of political, social, horrific nightmare that came to fruition. Life has come full circle. I've finally been attacked for nothing more than being Jewish, or being a woman, or being at the wrong place at the wrong time." 3 days later, Variety reported that three studios had distanced themselves from her. FX had worked with Siegel, but Variety reported that it was highly unlikely that they'd hire her again. This article will be continued in the next installment. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.